Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Political Roundtable talking about President-elect Donald Trump's policies and styles. My guests are Dr. Niambi Carter, Howard University political science professor, Jesse Holland, he's an author and political reporter for the Associated Press, and Eugene Craig, vice chair of the Maryland Republican Party. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Clarence calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think that we've been trying to deal with Trump in a more conventional manner when it comes to politics. He's more concerned about his base and how he deals with them. He's not as much concerned about how he deals with the establishment. I think by always trying to come at him or trying to understand him from that perspective, so we have to look at things a little bit different with him and try to take his message piece by piece as he gets. He's going to learn on the job, honestly. But, you know, we have to deal with what he does on the job when he gets it.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Eugene, you mentioned about a controlled message, and I wanted to follow up on that. I think the thing, particularly from the perspective of the news media, is that his representatives, you know, his press secretary and his advisors, when we see them, you know, on television or when we hear them, and they're asked about what Mr. Trump has said, they almost always start the answer with, well, what he meant was. And I think that that is a difficult position for them to be in, and indeed a difficult position for the American people to be in, because on one hand, you hear what he says, and then on the other hand, his people are trying to scramble and explain what they heard.
Yeah, well, the thing is this, you know, Donald Trump's not coming into a political office or political sphere as a polished political speaker. And what I mean by that is, you know, he doesn't have the necessary training that allows him to speak, you know, in the political platitudes that we're used to, the nuance. He speaks as plainly as he's used to speaking it.
Well, there's definitely going to be a learning curve here for the new administration, because there are some situations in which a president cannot afford to be misunderstood, especially when dealing with issues of national security, dealing with issues of contention in the United States, frankly. There are going to be times in which the president needs to be able to speak clearly, and the American people need to understand this is what their leader is going to do. So there is going to be a learning curve here. And until we know a little bit more about how he's going to operate as president. And that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind as well. And just like he just said, Donald Trump is not a politician. So some of the things that he says and does, we tend to look at from a political viewpoint. And when he just is, he might not be looking at it from a political standpoint quite yet. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we have to be sure that we understand that we don't try to read into a lot of his things that he says in a way in too much of a Washington way. But once again, there are going to have to be times where he's going to have to learn how to speak to Washington and how to speak to the world as a political leader. There are some people who question whether he's there yet.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tyrone calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm telling you, I've been listening to all this since Donald Trump been running for office. Donald Trump said what he's going to do. Donald Trump don't care about this country. Why are y'all putting him in office?
Well, that's
already made a statement.
Well, Tyrone, unfortunately,
he's a businessman, right?
Well, he's already there, so it's not about why we're putting him in office. I mean, what's done is done. So, you know, certainly, you know, we have to continue to move forward, you know, as January 20th comes. So it's not so much why are we or y'all or anyone else putting him in office. The y'all and the we and everyone else is already done. But just something for you to think about. Let us go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Byron in Silver Spring. Byron, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I've been closely monitoring and observing the entire political situation that's unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what a lot of us are not seeing that's clear, that appears to be very clear, is that there appears to be a changing of the new world, an ushering in of the new world order, or a shift in the powers that of the world. I think if we look at Rex Tillerson and the controversial of the hacking and all these things, and the president-elect, defending Russia to the highest point of unbelievable, I don't even know the word, but it's clear to see that America under Trump is trying to foster or create a new relationship with Russia, as opposed to the status quo of the old norm of Europe and NATO, because NATO that comprised the European powers and so forth. I think that that Trump is trying to bring Russia on board as an ally, in order to deal with the threats coming out of Asia, specifically North Korea and probably China, which he's very openly has expressed a negative overtures.
Okay.
He's not happy with China. So I think that's his strategy.
And it may very well be, and I appreciate your thought about that. Dr. Carter, what do you think about this New World Order hypothesis that the gentleman just brought about?
Well, I don't know, right? I mean, I think it remains to be seen. I think what Trump does and what the American people feel at this point are disjointed and disconnected. I don't think most Americans want a relationship with Russia, in a close relationship at that. I think the truth of the matter is the world is as it is, and we do have relationships, monetary ties to China, and those are not going away in the foreseeable future. And he'll have to figure out a way to deal with China. I mean, we'll see what he does in a couple weeks. I agree with the gentleman that he's already told us what he's trying to do, and whether he is the most skilled at it. He is a politician now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He is now the president. He has not had a long career in it. But I mean, it's sort of like being a cop. I mean, you were in the academy one day and the next day you're a police officer. Well, you're a police officer now. He's the president now. So he's a politician now. He's part of the Washington establishment. How he works with it, how he operates with it, I don't know. But I don't, given what top GOP leaders have said, I don't foresee this new realignment of the world sort of in the man in the high castle kind of way. I don't foresee that.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Rose calling from College Park. Thanks for calling, Rose. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Is giving us everything he promised us, which is nothing. He's promised us nothing, and he's given us nothing. I don't know why people are so, like, oh, my. He's not telling us anything. He didn't tell you anything before. But my question is, how come no one's brought up, no one cares that he offered Russia to hack into the emails? And it seemed like when he did it, it was a shoo. Right when he offered it is when they did it. He offered it. I'm offering you all. I'm telling you, go ahead and hack in. And, in so many words, it's open now. It's ready for you to go. And they did it.
Eugene, let me see what Eugene has to say about that. Because Eugene, I must say, to a certain extent, I think she has a point. But I think the reality is, and Jesse kind of alluded to it earlier, that he's not a politician. He's a businessman. And there's a lot of punking and bluster that goes on in big business. Is that what we're dealing with?
Well, no. When he made that comment, You know, WikiLeaks is already underway leaking things left and right. And you know, the comment that he made, I mean, it was a joke. It was, oh, hey, you know, if you just happen to find Hillary Clinton's, you know, 30,000 missed emails, you know, we'll like those as well. You know, because apparently at the time, you know, nobody could, you know, find them, retrieve them. You know, the server had been bleached. You know, the laptops had been destroyed. You know, FBI was even compliant to some of that, and you know, compliant to some of that. And so when he made the comment, it wasn't an invitation to, you know, oh, hey, come on and hack America. It was a joke. It was a, hey, you know, this person that was our Secretary of State, you know, that was the keeper of our national secrets, you know, had this unsecure server in which, you know, then, you know, oh, when we're going to go investigate her, you know, all the evidence just happens to disappear.
Okay, but always remember and keep in mind that the unsecured server was not the issue. It was the State Department which was the issue. I'm always fascinated that people always make reference to, yeah, she had an unsecured server. Yes, she said she shouldn't have done it. She shouldn't have done it. But the unsecured server was not the thing that was hacked.
Okay. And just to be specific, no Russian hacker actually found any missing emails of Hillary Clinton. They actually hacked the DNC.
The DNC, exactly.
And Hillary Clinton's, one of Hillary Clinton's political operatives.
Oh, yeah,
they didn't actually, if his invitation was for them to go out and find Hillary Clinton's missing emails, they didn't do it.
But I think what the caller is alluding to is that your language.
Hold on, Eugene. Go ahead, Dr. Carter.
But I think what the caller is alluding to is that your words matter. And when you say things like that, whether they're a joke or not, and somebody takes you up on it, then you have the right to then walk it back and say, well, I didn't really mean it. The fact that it happened is just sort of coincidental. And I think that is what the caller is speaking to, this sort of way in which we kind of play footsie with the many things that he says. And if something happens, and then we say, oh, he was joking. Of course he didn't mean it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, I say, you know, to Dr. Carter, well, I dare you to slap me. Well, you know, I'm kidding. But then she slaps me. And I was just kidding. Well, it's too late because I called your bluff. And I think that's, you know, that's really what she was, what the caller was referring to. Let me switch gears a little bit, because the second biggest issue, and some could argue a very close second, is the already festering battle this year over Obamacare and the Republicans. And we have seen the Vice President-elect Mike Pence on the Hill at the same time that President Obama was on the Hill, and the discussion about repeal and replace, or repeal and delay, and it's just really nasty. Your assessment of what's next, Jesse?
Well, I actually attended a Congressional Black Caucus meeting about the what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act today. And the reality of it is that there's very little Democrats can do in Congress to stop the Republicans from beginning the process of dismantling Obamacare. The question is going to be whether the Republicans are going to dismantle Obamacare immediately and replace it with something immediately, or dismantle Obamacare immediately and come up with a plan somewhere down the road.
Down the road, we've been 8 years down the road. They've been talking about this, you know, for 8 years, Eugene, and we still don't know what the plan is other than to repeal and replace, or just repeal, repeal, repeal. I want you to talk about that on the other side. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Political Roundtable talking about president-elect politics. Lines are still open. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about president-elect politics leading up to Inauguration Day. Eugene, before the break, I was asking about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. There's been no plan, just a plan to repeal President Obama's signature piece of legislation. So what is the deal with the plan? Let's tell the truth.
Well, there's a plan, and there's been a plan, and even, you know, framework of a plan for years. This is just the first time that, you know, we actually have, you know, Republican signature to actually, move forward on the issue of health care. But, let's not mince words with this. I mean, this is the failure of the Democrats and of President Obama. You were told to keep your plan, you keep your doctor. And what, folks have found out over the last 8 years is that those are just absolute complete abject lies. So, you just talk about a plan moving forward. First and foremost, is we have to repeal Obamacare.
But Eugene, if I may, we know about the repeal, and we know about the rhetorical template. My question is, what is the plan to make sure that some 25 to 30 million Americans that are currently under this plan are not adversely affected?
Well, first and foremost, things such as, young folk being able to stay on their parents' health insurance plan at 26. Things like, pre-existing condition costs.
Which are part of the original plan. And I guess...
Which are part of the original plan. Most folk agree on roughly the first 30 pages of the Affordable Care Act. It's the other 2,700 and the other 20,000 that are written by bureaucrats that folk absolutely disagree with, and that's hurting people right now, literally hurting people right now. So moving forward, what the Republican plan looks like, it looks like, it's like bringing back an expanded use of health savings accounts, age-adjusted tax credits, states being able to actually, make, full use of their Medicaid, Medicare dollars, when combined with tax credits to the individual. The most important, being able to cross state lines and purchase the insurance plan that actually works for you and your family. Right now, we literally have states that literally have one or two major health insurance providers. That's absolutely sad. And this is as a direct result of the Affordable Care Act.
But let me say this, because, prior to 2008, there was no Republican plan to provide any form of universal health care. And suffice it to say, back in the 1990s, the GOP was quite instrumental under the Clinton administration of destroying any chance that something like that would have happened even back then. So I think it's safe to say that no matter what party you belong to, if you are reaping any benefit of this at all, that you may be somewhat circumspect as to what any Republican political move may do to the health care that you now have. Dr. Carter?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what Eugene was talking about is they want to keep all the stuff that people like. Right. Because when you call it Obamacare, and I think this is where language becomes really important. Right. People hate it. But when you call it the Affordable Care Act, people like it. And right now we have a very slim majority of Republicans. At least this is what the Kaiser Family Foundation is reporting this week. Maybe 52% of Republicans want it repealed. And if you're a Trump supporter, you want it repealed outright and not necessarily replaced in the same kinds of ways. So I think there is a chance here because people actually do need and want health care, and we do better when we have a healthier population. Keeping people out of emergency rooms and those kinds of things, I think, are really important. When you think about what Obamacare does for all of its failures, preventive care is important. The fact that women don't have to pay these differential amounts of money for their annual visits and things like birth control, I mean, those are not small things. And I think for places like West Virginia, where you have people have black lung and they need this coverage, or people have these other kinds of catastrophic health conditions. I mean, it was something. It was an attempt at something, imperfect as it may be. I think everybody is not saying that it isn't. But we also can't forget the healthcare providers in this, right? So it's not just the people who are going to lose coverage, but what about those people as well? I mean, I think it's a – and what incentive do insurance companies have to stick around if this is just going to be kicked to the curb?
And here's an interesting political balance going on the Hill right now. Democrats do realize that Republicans have the votes to dismantle it. The fight going on in the Democratic Party right now is, do we help them replace it?
Mm-hmm. And the president said yesterday, and don't do that.
Don't do that. Exactly. The fight in the Democratic Party that's going on the Hill right now is, how do you stand by and watch it be dismantled, knowing that a lot of your constituents are involved? But the smart political thing to do is to stand back and watch it go away. and not try to help replace it, and then say the other parties is why you don't have health care right now.
Then they will own it.
And then they will own it. Yeah. But then you do end up condemning some of your constituents to going back to having no health care. So the Democrats are having this little interesting moral quandary over what's about to happen to the Affordable Health Care Act right now.
William, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, this is William. I'm Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to your conversation, I initially was going to comment earlier about some of the early things you stated, but now that you're on Obamacare, it just seems like the misinformation that we're getting from the Republicans is kind of standard, and for some reason we allow it. We used to have specific plans, specific knowledge about what we were trying to do, what we were trying to accomplish, but now we just get tweets or sound bites. And to be honest, if you really look at Obamacare is a very similar program that Mitt Romney did, a Republican, out of Massachusetts. So to say that, you know, that they are now willing to just get rid of it, they have nothing they want to replace it with, and I guess that's monetary in nature. But the misinformation that we're constantly getting, it's just to keep us thrown off and so that we really don't know what's really going on. Donald Trump is the most unique person we've ever dealt with, and I don't mean that in a positive way. He seems to keep us off balance at all times so that keep having these conversations, but in 4 years, you know, we'll still be dealing with these same issues.
Maybe, or maybe in 2 years. Because don't forget, we do have midterm elections, and I will tell you, this
the setup Democrats will probably be obliterated again.
Well, that's hard to say because let me say this, because this is one of the things that has been discussed over the past couple of days, Marvin, and that in Democratic leadership has said, and this has to do with Jesse's argument about that internal battle. If they allow the Republicans to dismantle Obamacare, it may take 2 years. That will coincide with the midterm elections. If enough people are hurt by the dismantling of this without a solution that the GOP could pay for it in the midterm elections, or the entire class of Congress and senators may pay for it in one way, shape, or another in the midterm election. So.
But we also have to keep in mind that the pendulum could swing both ways.
Yeah.
I mean, we honestly don't know what's going to happen if the Obamacare, if the Affordable Care Act is repealed. Maybe things will all of a sudden get better in medical care. So it could be a boon.
Yeah, it could be.
But all we know right now is that the Republicans are doing exactly what they said they would do. They said it for the last 6 years of President Obama's term in office. They said it throughout the entire presidential election that repealing Obamacare was going to be the first thing they started working on.
And that
wasn't misinformation. That's the first thing they're starting working on. Now, what we all have to sit back and wait and watch and find out is there a plan to replace it? There's a very clear plan to repeal it. Is there a plan to replace it, and what that plan is going to be, and how that plan will benefit Americans?
Okay, well, thank you so much. Let us go to Marvin calling from Waldorf. Marvin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you, Harold, and Happy New Year to you. And
thank you so much.
Hello to your guests and panel. I just got a comment to make as to President-elect Trump. I think, I still see him as a businessman. And I think a lot of the moves and the noise that he's making coming out of his camp, he's going to run the country as a businessman. I don't think you can become a politician overnight or the on-the-job training. You know, the parallel that she gave as far as being a patrol officer, you know, first you go to training, and you train to become a patrol officer, then you train with somebody, and then you put on the street to be a cop. With Donald Trump, there was no training. You know, this is it. Now he's a politician. He's a president. He's elected. So I don't think there's going to be room for error. Yes. People are going to give him a pass because they want to. But I don't think there's something that you can do on the job. His choices that he has made as far as certain cabinets, I'm really concerned. I'm a federal employee. And some of the things that I hear coming out as far as, you know, downsizing the government, finding a way to start eliminating federal jobs, finding ways to cut benefits and cut salaries. So, you know, the only one I see that's going to benefit from his presidency would be those in business, whether that be, you know, foreign business interests or American interests. But I don't think that the American people as a whole, especially federal workers, are really going to be excited about a lot of the things that are going to come up in this administration.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We've got only a few minutes left. Looks like there are going to be plenty of places to stay on January 20th as far as hotels are concerned, unlike as we've seen in recent past where you couldn't get a hotel room or you couldn't even find a hotel front step to sleep on for the inauguration. This one, not so much. What's going on here, Dr. Carter?
I mean, I think it speaks to perhaps a lack of excitement for those who are not Trump supporters. I think the lineup has something to do with it as well. I mean, there are a lot of parties and things associated with Inauguration Weekend that have nothing to do with the president. And unfortunately, D.C. is going to be a fairly dry place during that weekend for the lineups and the parties that kind of made the Obama's inauguration years attractive, or even inaugurations in years past. I mean, President Bush had, I think, a fairly robust inaugural weekend with all kinds of performers. And I think it speaks to a way in which people want to use whatever status they have as celebrities, as individuals, to make some statement about what they believe in, what they represent by not coming here. And not performing. So, I mean, I think it's just a reflection on, I think, a general sensibility about this administration.
Eugene, are you going to any parties or are you going to stay home?
Absolutely. I'll be attending events.
Okay. You said absolutely. I thought you were going to say absolutely. You were going to stay home.
Tuesday to Saturday.
And of course, Jesse, you'll be working.
I'll be working. I don't get to party. I have to work.
That's right. As always, listen, I want to thank all of you all for joining in this conversation. And, you know, the one good thing that we can say about and I think we all can agree is that the president-elect is constantly giving us something to talk about. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, January 5th, 2017. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold T. Fisher or Twitter at H. Fisher, WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World.